a little trip with me, and hopefully you can see how the hood, suburbs, and Main Street are all connected. Enough respect, I mean, we network across the globe, cause it's a global market in case you didn't know. And since we all about information flow, let me be the first one to welcome you to Tech Zone with Paul Amadeus Lane. Let's talk tech, cause technology changing the game. It's all good in the hood, it's everywhere. Now let's get to the show, cause we live on air, yeah.
Hello and welcome to this edition of the Tech Zone. I'm Paul Amadeus Lane. I'm your czar of technology, and I'm so happy to have you with me on the show today. Remember, you can always catch up on episodes on iHeartRadio, TuneIn, iTunes. You got it. We have you covered. Now go to my website, paulamadeuslane.com. That's the best way to connect with me via social media, send me messages, or to just say hello. And we thank you guys so much for sharing your episodes, downloading the episodes, and watching us on YouTube as well. You may be asking, how can I check out the video segments of this show? Well, go to YouTube. If you Google Paul Amadeus Lane, that takes you to my YouTube channel, and you can check out some past episodes. And I can't believe we are on episode number 52, I believe. Isn't that right, Sean? Wow, time flies, and it's been an honor and a pleasure to be with you and to talk tech, talk entertainment. It's just been a blast. Hey, on our show today, we're going to finish up our Comic-Con review that we've been doing, some of the show press rooms that we went to, and the technological aspects of some of these shows were amazing. And that's why I went to highlight and talk to some of these shows at the press room, because if you notice the way technology is going today, these shows look phenomenal. I mean, go back to old Battlestar Galactica days, you know, the way the ships looked and everything. Now, things are growing, and it's due to technology. Now, before we start with our first segment and the interviews that we have during the segment, big news broke this week in a streaming platform. Some of you may not be aware of it, but Disney is going to start its own streaming platform service beginning in 2019. Remember, you can now check out some of the Pixar movies and productions on Netflix right now, right? Not no more. They're getting ready to stop that in 2019. And we're starting to see a trend now with Amazon, with HBO, with Time Warner, and the streaming services. They are throwing in billions of dollars to streaming content now because they see that they can make more money, be more profitable by doing that. So what is that going to do to traditional TV? I will tell you what's going to do to it. Just look at the signs now and watch them. Look at Time Warner. Look at Spectrum. Look at Dish Network, look at DirecTV. You notice the killer deals you can get now on those different services right there? And they want to lock you in for 2 years because they see the light of what's happening. My prediction is, and you know I am a part-time Nostradamus, is that I say within the next 5 years, we may see the end of Dish Network. You may see the end of DirecTV, Time Warner, Spectrum, as we know it. And you're going to see them go to a more streaming content-based service. Because if you look at it, they can really tell how many is really watching at that time when they're streaming. Because right now with the Nielsen and Arbitron ratings, we get this a lot in radio and television, especially our advertising team. Well, how many listeners do you have? Are you on Arbitron or Nielsen? See, what happens with those type of diaries, they can be fudged, right? Because what they do is they take maybe like a portion of the population, let's say about 8 to 10% of the population, and that's the ones that do the diaries. And what they do now is on an average, put that with the average of, let's say if it's 3 million. So whatever the 8 to 10% of the population is doing, what they do is come up with an average of how many listeners and viewers that they have. And it's really not accurate. But with streaming, there's no more funny business now. You will know how many times your content is being streamed, who's watching it. You probably won't be able to find out how many are watching at that time, but you're going to start to see maybe how many are viewing at this time, and you can put it in there. But it's really going to change the game. You know, no more fudging the numbers. The way technology is now, hence the Tech Zone, things can get a little bit more accurate now. And advertisers are going through that. That's just like the podcast for the Tech Zone. I can tell how many people are downloading or are listening to it. And even on YouTube, I can tell how many people are watching it and access it. And then in turn, we can take that to different advertisers, different sponsors, and say, this is what we have. And it's hard data. It's not something you can fudge the numbers with. So things are changing when it comes to the way that we watch television and consume it. I mean, think about it. My prediction, 5 years, we're going to see the end of cable and satellite as we know it. And something else is going to really morph from that. All right. Well, enough of me giving you the doom and gloom. I hope you don't work for, you know, DirecTV or Dish Network or Charter and everything. I gave you the doom, but trust me, more technology is out there and you'll be able to survive. See, trust me. Believe me. I always wanted to say that. But on this show, again, we're going to be talking about some of our great guests that we interviewed at Comic-Con. And first up, had an opportunity to talk to a few of the castmates for the sci-fi show The Expanse. Are you familiar with The Expanse? Well, if you're not, I'll give you a little rundown of this show. It started out, it's going on season 4, a police detective in the asteroid belt. He was the first officer of an interplanetary ice freighter, and an earthbound United Nations executive slowly discover a vast conspiracy that threatens the Earth's rebellious colony of the asteroid belt. So that's how the series kind of started. And it takes 100 years in the future. It takes place 100 years in the future, and things are different than where we are used to seeing humans. After they have colonized the solar system and Mars has become an independent military power, tensions rise between Earth and Mars, you know, the Bloods and the Crips, you know, it always happens. And a detective and a rogue ship's captain come together to investigate the case of a missing young woman. And the story just morphs from there. And it is really intriguing, and it's really, you know, I really enjoy it. First, we had an opportunity to talk to Emmy Award winner Sheree Ascoli. She plays Christian Vassalara on The Expanse, and also Frankie Adams, who plays Bobby Draper. And had a chance to talk to these two beautiful women about their characters. And one thing you're going to find out about the characters if you watch the show is that it kind of evolved over maybe like 3 or 4 episodes. They went from being enemies to being close friends, and had an opportunity to ask them about that. All right. When we look at both of your characters over the season, it really is like a mentor relationship. Is that how you would characterize it?
That's how I feel about this relationship. Absolutely. To Eva Sorolla, Bobby is not just a young woman from Mars. She is she's the best pupil for her to mentor, to get friendly with, to understand the concept of Mars and what is going on there. But also, I love the relationship between the two women. They do not only like each other, but they're also very much interested in one another, and they're so protective of one another. It's just, it's amazing. I'm so proud of this relationship.
And how's it working with Sheree? She's a wonderful actor.
I think I might have won the lottery because, like, anybody my age would be absolutely privileged to be on a show like this, and somehow I ended up working with Sheree every day, which is just amazing. And I'm just like a sponge. I just want to absorb all the knowledge that she knows and hopefully one day be as great as her.
You know, in the last episode,
I knew you were going to kick some butt. I said, you're going to go in there and make it happen. How was it playing that role?
It was great. It was good because those guys were stunties. So usually I get a bit nervous if I'm working with an actor because I don't want to hit them accidentally or anything, or insurance, you know.
Yeah.
But stunt doubles, you can have more freedom with it. And they're so open to being beaten up. I think they find joy in it, actually. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And Sheree, you don't get revenge from being betrayed by that coward?
If I ever see him on the face of the earth again, mm-hmm. I know what to do with him. I'll ask my goddess to take care
to
of him.
To kill him?
I'm beyond this now. I don't want to even see him. I'll send my angel. Can you believe it? Such a betrayer. I guess the real question, not just in fantasy and expanse and science fiction, but in real world nowadays is, who is a hero? Who is a betrayer? Who is working for us people as a politician, real politician? Who is a betrayer and is a puppet politician? That's my question, I mean, personally.
And will you guys interact with the crew this season?
Yes, we're looking forward to it. We're very much looking forward to it. Because now that I'm in a space, this Martian gets to be in a space all the time. But now that Avasarala is in a space, the two of them are together. So the possibility of seeing each other is becoming more and more
likely.
Likely.
Yeah. But we can't say too much. But, you know.
Well, it was an honor speaking to you both, and much success.
Thank you so much.
Sheree was amazing. She, even before the interview started, and maybe some of you have seen this live when we streamed it live on Facebook, she loved my bow tie and the color that I had, and she was just so awesome. And then when we were leaving the press room, I saw her, and I was going to go up to her and say, hey, Sheree, do you mind if I take a picture? She came to me and said, can I take a picture of you and post it? I was like, can you? Of course you can. She put it on Instagram and Twitter. And here's an image of how many people liked that photo. I tell you, it's awesome to be admired by an Emmy Award-winning actor, Sheree Askadalu. She is awesome. Next up, we had an opportunity to talk to two more stars of The Expanse. Stephen Strait, who plays Jim Holden. And also Dominique Tipper, who plays Naomi Nagata. And their characters kind of morphed into something we didn't see. And had an opportunity to talk to them about the next season. Will we see some surprises or what's out there? And I even asked her, for some of you who watch the show, what's up with you and Fred Johnson? See, to really know what I'm talking about, you got to watch the show. You can catch up on demand. Sci-Fi has an app. You can catch them on demand. Amazon Prime. And see, that's what I'm talking about. The way that we consume TV has changed. Like my buddy Sean, who engineers the Tech Zone, who's one of the great guys over at ABC News Radio, KMET. Sean and I are both fans of The Man in the High Castle. And I know we've binge-watched that show. And I'm telling you, the way that we consume is different. But enough about streaming right now. But here, check out my conversation with Steven and also Dominique.
Now, the way the season ended last season, it kind of threw us all for a loop. You guys are...
I'm sorry, okay?
I was like, what's up with you and Fred Johnson? Something you want to tell me? but talk about the dynamic going into the next season about your relationship.
Yeah, it's obviously a really hard time for Holden and Naomi. I mean, you know, they... they've been through all these things, and then that bombshell at the end really shatters the trust on this very fragile family on the Rossi crew. So, you know, I mean, they're trying to pick up the pieces in the third season, and they, you know, again, they're having to deal with all these crises, you know. So it's an urgent problem to kind of keep them all together, but it's hard right now. It's definitely a hard time for them.
And Naomi, are you going to eat a little bit of humble pie and try to get back in his good graces or what?
I think that's the hard thing about starting off this season is that although she feels sorry for the fact that she's broken all these relationships, she still very much stands by what she's done and thinks that it was the right thing. She's not She's not standing there going, I shouldn't have done it. She still believes it's the right thing. But I think it's that kind of situation, you know, I was just talking about it with Noreen, our showrunner, where she can't leave. She can't leave the ship. So she has to just stay there in a stew in her dirty bathwater, for want of a better metaphor. But yeah, she's trying to patch things up, but she's still standing by what she's done. So it's tough.
And the last question, will you guys interact with Bobby and Sheree's character in season 3, or can you tell us that?
I don't know if we can say, but I will say this, is that, you know, there's definitely a lot of things people want to see will happen this year. And, you know, Earth and Mars are about to start a war. If that war happens, we know what the protomolecule is doing. Big stuff is happening this year. The world continues to get more epic and yet more intimate as well.
Bobby and Avasarala are in space, and so are we. So maybe we're
I don't know.
Maybe we're too.
Well, we're definitely looking forward to it, and great talking to you both.
No, thanks so much, man.
Appreciate it. You guys are awesome.
Thank you, dude.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you, my
dear.
You too. Nice to meet you.
All right, I'd like to thank the great cast of The Expanse. Check it out. Stream it. Catch up. I tell you, the show is exciting. It will definitely keep you on your toes. And Sci-Fi is an app that you can catch up on a few episodes of the season, but you can also stream on Amazon Prime. And I know I love binge watching, and my buddy Sean at the station too. We both watched The Man in the High Castle, and I remember when I binge watched it first and told Sean, you got to check it out. And Sean binge watched it too. So the way that we're consuming things, you can catch up. Think about it for a second, folks. If you grew up in the 70s or 80s, once a show was gone, you had to wait for the reruns. They didn't even have it on VHS tapes. You do. I mean, if you taped it yourself, you could. But the way technology is now, I mean, it's amazing. We can binge watch. Let's do it. Catch up on demand. Make sure you check out The Expanse. When we get back, we're going to talk to the men of the sci-fi show 12 Monkeys. Remember last show, we talked to the ladies of the 12 Monkeys sci-fi show. If you don't remember, you can catch up the episode. Go to my YouTube channel. If you want to listen to it, check it out on iTunes. Check it out on iHeartRadio. We got you covered. We'll be right back with more Tech Zone coming up right after these messages. Welcome back to the Tech Zone. Paul Amadeus Lane, ABC News, KMET. Streaming, listening, videoing, whatever you're doing, we got you covered here on the Tech Zone and ABC News, KMET 1490. Last week, had an opportunity to talk to two of the beautiful leading ladies of the sci-fi show, 12 Monkeys, Amanda Scholl, and also Emily Hampshire. Amanda, she plays Dr. Cassandra Reilly, or Cassie, as the main character we're going to interview now calls her. And also Emily Hampshire, she plays Jennifer Goins, the vivacious one. Now, if you watch or listen to the last episode of the show, hopefully you did some research on her character. And let me know if my description of her or my interview with her was just spot on. Please let me know. She's amazing. She is awesome. All right. Well, we decided to talk to the guys of the 12 Monkeys. The main character is James Cole. He's played by Aaron Stanford. Now, some of you may remember Aaron from the X-Men movies. He was Pyro. One of my favorite characters in X-Men, and had an opportunity to talk to him about what it's like to play this character and what's in store. One thing you notice when a show starts to when a show is getting ready to end is there's a maturation process of the different characters, and you really see the growth of them
And you can see it in Aaron's character as well, too, and had an opportunity to chat with him about it.
Good to see you.
Great to have you, and it's an honor to talk to you, my friend. When I saw you get the role of James Cole, I was like, he is going to kill it. This is like his element. When you first got cast, how did you feel about it?
Well, I was shocked, first of all. I didn't expect to be cast in a role that that Bruce Willis made famous. I knew Terry Metalis, the showrunner. He asked me to come in. I sort of did it just because I knew him and he wanted to see me, so I came in, but I didn't think much of it. And, you know, for whatever reason, they saw something in me that they thought fit, you know, what they wanted this new interpretation of the character to be. And thankfully it worked out because it's been a great time.
And Aaron, the storyline, it jumps everywhere, but you can follow it.
Yeah.
Playing those different roles in the different time that you jump to or that you splinter to, how do you keep all that straight in your head?
It's tough, man. It's really hard. And as the show went on, it got more and more ambitious, and we didn't get any more time to make it work. So we ended up, we're like shooting multiple episodes at the same time and block shooting and mixing and matching. So it got pretty crazy. And, you know, the answer is by the skin of our teeth is how we keep track of it. And we have writers on set a lot, and we take a lot of breaks between shooting to step back and say, okay, what exactly happened prior to this, and does this track, does it make sense that he's in this mindset in this particular time? Does it contradict anything? So it's a lot of work.
And it really shows off your talent, my friend, because I was like, wow. You know, I couldn't do that. I would be like, okay, what am I talking about now? What am I doing now? But you do it with ease.
We do our best.
And when we look at the different seasons, season 3 with The Witness, your son, and take us through the emotions of just playing that part, of finding out that you had a son and he was going to be this person who was going to destroy the world but end up saving it. You know, talk about that.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's tough to get your head around, you know. And the character of Cole, really, at first, he doesn't know how to take it in. He sees it really in an abstract way, and he hears the news that he's had a son, but all he really thinks about is the fact that, you know, his son is responsible for the death of 7 billion people. So, you know, he sees his son as a problem to solve. And then he finally gets to have contact with him. He looks into his eyes, and he sees himself in his son, and he sees the woman he loves in his son, and he realizes that, you know, he is a person. And, you know, suddenly he does a 180, and he can't do it anymore, and he'd rather try to save this child than sacrifice him.
You know, a lot of viewers and fans out there really love the dynamic between you and Ramsey.
Yeah.
And you can really tell you guys have a lot of chemistry on that camera together.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And you will see him coming back for season 4. I cannot say in exactly what capacity, but he does rear his head again, yeah.
And as we see all the seasons that we have been able to watch, what has been like your most memorable episode?
What have they been? I mean, I really enjoyed season 3. Really got interesting. You know, the writers decided to have a lot more fun with the time travel element. I thought the 80s episode was a lot of fun with the bank heist and me in the Marty McFly outfit. That was it was a hoot. It was a good time.
And when we look at season 4, it's coming to an end. It really saddens me personally because I'm a huge fan of the show, and I know you playing James Cole and just being a part of that. How does that make you feel knowing it's coming to an end?
You know, it's always sad when stories come to an end. You know, when you're about to, you're at the last chapter of the novel and you're about to close the cover. It's sad, but that's the nature of a story. It's got a beginning and it's got an end. And I'm just happy that we were able to have enough time to properly tell this story, and that we knew in advance when we were bringing it to a close. You see, a lot of these series, they just spin them out for 8 or 9 seasons, and eventually, like, the mythology gets so sprawled out, you can't bring it back to a close. So I'm happy we were able to properly.
Now, what the cameras didn't show you, because we had some technical difficulties in during the interview was that I asked Aaron the question about playing Pyro in X-Men. That one part when little snot-nosed punk Bobby Drake's brother, remember when he turned him in? Called the police, remember, because it was Wolverine, it was Rogue, and it was Pyro, and it was also Iceman, Bobby Drake. They were at his house because they're on the run. Remember, they went in and they trashed Professor's his mansion. So they went home, and his little punk brother, what did he do? Called the police. And remember that one scene there, they're sitting or they're standing on the porch when the police come. And this is when they shot Wolverine, shot him right in the head. And Wolverine, they thought Wolverine was dead, right? But you know, whatever that word is. And remember what Pyro said? He said, remember those mutants they warned you about? Well, I'm him. And I was like, wow. Sean, you know what I'm talking about, right? Some of you X-Men aficionados out there, you know what I'm talking about too. Wasn't that awesome? And I asked Aaron about that, and I asked him, did he improvise? And he said, no, he didn't improvise. It was actually written in the script. So the cameras didn't show you that. It was because we had a technical difficulty, but it was awesome. Yeah. Got a video of it, but no sound. Maybe I'll release that anyway. Next, I had an opportunity to talk to Todd Stashwick. Todd played Deacon. Or plays Deacon, or actually played Deacon, because this is the last season. And his character this last season was particularly different. And there was one episode that just showed off Todd's acting ability. I really didn't know he had it in him, because he plays Deacon kind of this tough guy who really takes no mess, right? Kind of reminds you of me. I'm just joking. And he played that scene well. So I had an opportunity to ask him, where did he draw the motivation behind that episode and his feelings about his character? Todd, you know, Deacon's character has, let's say, transformed to being a good guy? Can we say good guy?
I would say he's a protagonist. He went from kind of mainly an antagonist to being a protagonist. Good, that's a relative issue. Because some people would have thought in season three that I was working against the cause, because they didn't want me going after the witness. Because they're like, no, that's Colin Cassie's boy, so don't hurt him. I'm like, so I think good is a relative term, but he certainly is a protagonist. He is trying to save the world, so, you know, that's a good thing.
I think one of the episodes that really showed off your expertise in acting was the one when you're having flashbacks of your father.
Thank you.
And take us through how you got prepared to do that role.
Well, about 5 months before that, I got a text from Terry Metalis, and he said, get ripped. I said, like, what kind? He said, like, prison yard, like De Niro in Cape Fear. And then he called me later, and then he was like, we want to do this scene with you and your father. Would you be willing to play both roles? And I'm like, what a gift. So it was like a kind of a double challenge. So I then went on a very, very restricted diet, a very rigorous workout regime, and dropped 30 pounds. I got my chin-up game on, and my push-up game on, because I knew I had to be shirtless for that entire episode. So it's like, you know, I got to at least be okay with what I'm seeing. So it was a lot of discipline. I was working out 9 times a week. I wasn't touching a drop of booze or sugar or all the things that make life fun at times. But the payoff was great, and it really helped me kind of focus in and get to focus that he needed to survive that event. So I went through something transformative, as the character went through something transformative.
No, you really did an awesome job. And it seems like Deacon's character still has a little love for Cassie.
How could you not? How could she not? I mean, he grew up watching her on TV, and he was, you know, she represented safety at home and safe harbor and all these things to him when he was a boy and scared growing up in the apocalypse, that when he finally got to meet her as a grown up, and she needed him now to survive, it formed a deep bond between the two of them.
Yeah. And you know, it was funny. I was talking to some of my friends that I grew up with who are big fans of the show. And we grew up like in L.A. and Compton area. And we were talking about the show. And they said, I can't believe Deacon hit that. That's what they, you know, they use the street language. But you got a lot of street cred when that happened.
Hey, you know what? I don't think he could either. I think he was feeling like a Beauty and the Beast, right? I think he was feeling something. It was a profound moment, and it wasn't just about something cheap. It was profound for him, and he doesn't let a lot of people in.
Yeah, I mean, we can really sense that. Now, before I let you go, too, yeah. Season 4 is coming up, final season.
Yeah.
Take us through the emotions of it coming to an end.
It's hard. It's a series of diminishing goodbyes, you know, like I had to say goodbye to the Time Machine and say goodbye to all the cast, all the crew that we worked with together in Toronto before we go into Prague to finish up. And I've had to be away from my family for 3 years. And so I was fortunate to be with these people. If I had to be away from home, it was with these people. And so I love all these people and I love these stories and I love this character. So they're big shoes to fill. You know, it'll be interesting to see what I do after this, because this one spoiled me.
Well, I'm a huge fan, and I'll be a huge fan of Deacon, a huge fan of you, Todd.
Thank you.
And much success in your future endeavors, my friend.
Let me give a shout out to Nerd Strong Gym. They're the ones that put me through the paces to get Deacon in shape, and Fit Facts in Pasadena. She was Sarah Lynn Baird. She was the one who gave me the diet that helped me get in fight and shape, so that I could, you know, fall apart on screen.
Now, with that being said, can they do something with all the sexiness like they...
That's right. That,
like they did with you?
That's all just the food, my friend.
All right.
But you know what? We like our food. Like I said, right after I finished my final scene where I had to be like that, one of the producers came over and he gave me a bottle of bourbon. He's like, you've earned this. So we toasted the end of that wrap. After we wrapped that episode, we're like, okay, 5 months of work. Yeah, cheers. Thank you so
Great
much.
Great talking to you, Todd. Right. I'd like to thank Todd Stashwick and Aaron Stanford for joining me on the Tech Zone. I really enjoyed talking to you. I'm really going to miss the 12 Monkeys. That was I really enjoyed that. At first, I wasn't going to watch it. Then I started watching it, and I got hooked by it. So, again, you can catch up on that on demand, all because of technology, the way it is now. Hence, the Tech Zone, folks. Hey. Are you looking for some good entertainment when it comes to children? Maybe you're a parent and you don't want them to see the a lot of violence or, you know, just suggestive things on television. All right. When we get back, we're going to finish our discussion about kids programming, kids content. A few weeks back, had an opportunity to interview the legendary Marty Croft. Maybe you've caught that episode. If not, you can catch it up on demand. And also actor David Arquette about the Sigmund and the Sea Monsters reboot. Well, Amazon Prime Instant Video, they have just a lot of children programming out there. And had an opportunity to catch up with two more of the shows that they have and some of the well-known actors who are voicing them. So we'll be right back right after these messages. Tech Zone. Welcome back to the Tech Zone. I am Paul Amadeus Lane. Thank you so much for staying tuned. I mentioned it in the first segment of the show. If you watch Pixar or Disney content on Netflix, no more. After 2019, Disney is entering the realm of streaming content. It's going to change the game. if you're a Dish Network survivor, yeah, pretty really a survivor, a DirecTV subscriber, things are going to change. A cable subscriber is going to change. You can always tell when something is brewing, when they offer killer deals, when it comes to the packages and things like that. The writing's on the wall, streaming content. And my next guest, who I had an opportunity to talk to at Comic-Con 2017, is streaming content. Danger and Eggs. Maybe you remember watching that. Maybe your kid's watching that. Well, you can check it out on Amazon Prime Instant Video. Had an opportunity to talk to three voice actors. I'm going to mention their names because you may not be aware that they were the voices on Danger and Eggs. Charlene Yee. Jessica Nicole. Remember Jessica from Friends? She was Asterith on Friends and also Kim on Scandal. She's a voice on Danger and Eggs. And a particular sassy, take no mess, New York detective, Rosa Diaz. Does that ring a bell, her character? Stephanie Beatrice. I had an opportunity to talk to those three ladies and ask them just about the show and what they hope to accomplish.
She's a smart one.
Come on, Charlene.
He said something really good today.
Oh, my God. We never get to hear enough from Charlene. Anyway, I would say what's important about this show is that it's super diverse, and not just diverse in terms of, you know, what the skin color of the characters are. It's diverse in terms of ability, sexuality, gender representation, gender identification, all these really cool mental health. Thank you very much. All these really important things that the real world deals with that you don't always get to see in media and very rarely get to see in cartoons. I think that this show is trying to bring a light to it in a way that doesn't feel like it's, you know, pointing it out and saying, hey, you're so different, but saying, hey, we're more alike than you even think, because, you know, we're all human and we all have these like really different things about us, and we can celebrate that instead of point it out and make you feel, you know, out of line with everybody else.
Different about being a voice actor than doing some motion acting, because I know you're a great motion actor. Love the show that you're on.
Thanks.
But how's it different? And you too, how's it different from doing like a sitcom or a drama and now doing voice acting?
Well, I mean, you're kind of in a vacuum, right? Like, for this show, we were all recording in a booth by ourselves. So you're just making everything else up. So you got to just fully use all that like childlike imagination part of yourself. And they're on television. I don't know if you guys have felt this way before, but like television and film, sometimes like physically I get sort of like, where am I supposed to do? And like, how do I look? And, you know, and then this, it's like, you just don't care. And there's no nerves about how you look. So you're just doing everything physical that you can to like get in your space. And like, you're using your body in all these different ways and like really transforming yourself to make that voice come out of your body and make it as sort of real as possible. Even though it's a kids' show, you're still trying to do your best work. So there's a lot of freedom in it in a weird, cool way.
When it comes to, I guess, the feedback that you guys have gotten from the show, a lot of parents are really encouraged by having some content out there that the kids can watch. And talk about how important that is.
I don't know. I guess when I was a kid, there was very few things I relate to. And I like things with substance that has heart and it is emotionally challenging me, and so I am a grown woman and I find it very interesting and challenging, and I respect that, and I think as a kid I would have so appreciated to have this cartoon.
I was just going to say, I also, in line with what you're saying, I feel like they're assuming that the kids who are watching this are intellectuals, you know. Yeah. It's not pandering down to, you know, the lowest common denominator with, yeah, the fart joke, although everybody loves a fart joke.
Sure, sure.
They have a place everywhere.
Sure,
but
sure.
But they're also dealing with themes that I think a lot of people don't think that kids are ready to handle, and we're not really giving them the space to be these, you know, individuals that are forming their own opinions about things, and they can't form opinions about these big topics if they're not being introduced to them at a young age. So that's another thing I think that is really exciting about Danger and Eggs on Amazon.
I'd like to thank the ladies who voice some of the characters in Danger and Eggs for joining me. I'm telling you, Stephanie Beatrice, you know, you know her character on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Rosa Diaz. She's like real hard and doesn't take any mess. Sometimes you see a smile, but she has such a beautiful smile. When I first met her, she was like, hi. I was like, Rosa don't beat me up. No, but she was super cool. Super cool. Next up, we had a chance to talk to Mike Owens, A.D. Bryant, who plays D.D. Danger, Saturday Night Live fame, and Eric Noble, who plays Philip, and the Pigeon Lady. Got a chance to talk to them, too. Check it out.
Yeah, I mean, I love being a part of this show, and I'm so thankful to the creators for letting me be in it. I love playing Dee Dee. She's such like an energetic, ready for adventure kind of person, and I'm not always that way, so it feels really fun to get to be her voice. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, and it's really great. We got supported on so many things, like really cool LGBT issues, and then we got to do traditional animations. The animation looks really good and smooth, and we had plenty of time to write, so I think it turned out pretty funny, and
yeah,
we got like our dream cast, so it's just been like an incredible experience, and I think it's coming through. People are saying a lot of really nice things.
Yeah, and just having working with the artists that were working on the show, when they would be doing the work and laughing as it's coming out of their pencil, and just like everyone just brought their heart to it, which was and just it shows in the final product.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think heart's a good word, too. Like, there's a lot of the emotion, there's a lot of the heart, but there's also, like, so much comedy in it, too. It's just, like, a super fun project that works on kind of every level everybody was trying to make happen. So, yeah.
And what I've been really liking is the feedback the parents have given the show. And that has to be really cool to see parents like, hey, this is some content that my kids really like, and it's teaching them a lesson.
Yeah.
Talk about how that makes you all feel personally.
Well, we definitely had some lessons, I guess, with some themes of the show. Mm. And when you're doing that, you're like, oh, is this like really preachy? But right. The one comment that I've read over and over again is it's like, it's not too heavy-handed. And I'm like, phew.
Yeah, yeah, it's always
phew. Right. Yeah, I feel like there's a line. And I guess we didn't cross that line. So the parents are like loving it. We're getting unbelievable messages, and the press has all been good. There's been one negative Amazon review since it came out, and we're dealing with that person.
We're hunting
personally.
Them.
Yeah.
Now, you know what I also think is really cool is that, like, so many adults have said that they really enjoy the comedy of the show and that it's, like, enjoyable for them to watch with their kids. It's not just a kid's show. Right. So I think that's, like, something to be so proud of, you know?
But, yeah, that was really important.
We thought about that when we were starting to create. Like, we really wanted to consider that we weren't doing a single-level layer kind of show. Like, we really wanted the audience as wide as possible.
We started working together on Yo Gabba Gabba, and that was, like, a really important part of that show. And we just wanted to, like, keep that design and that energy, but that working on, we wanted parents to be able to watch with their kids for sure and try to make that happen, so it's good to hear that that's working out.
Well, if you get any more negative reviews, you know I grew up in the hood, I can handle that for y'all.
Yeah, that's what we need.
The username is
I got your back.
But
when it comes to, I guess, ones who haven't watched the show yet, mm-hmm. what kind of spill can you give them as far as why they should watch the show?
Ooh, I think they should watch this show because I truly have never seen another show like this. And there are so many things about it that I think they will find nowhere else on television. So that's a cool thing. Yeah.
And I think for people, if you like to laugh and you like comedy, then you'll like the show.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it was great catching up with you guys, and much success.
Thank you.
We'll call you about the
the
guy.
Yeah.
I got your back. The next Amazon Prime instant video show we will look at for kids is Nico and the Sword of Light. What it does is it follows little Nico around, and he's able to bring some love and justice to the world. Instead of me trying to explain to it, had an opportunity to talk to a few of the creators, and also one of the writers. And I'll let them introduce themselves.
I'm Kay Asadera. I'm a co-creator of Nico.
I'm Jim Bryson, also a co-creator.
Adam Jeffcoat, another co-creator of Nico.
And the last co-creator, Bobby Chu.
All right, so talk about the process of even creating the show, and also it being on Amazon Prime for kids. I think it's amazing because kids need some good content. What was like the mindset of getting it all together? Who wants to go first?
Well, it was really just a ultimate dream that we had to create a world, create characters that were all our own, and let's put it out there before anybody touches it, and then we put it out there and everybody loved it. So it's been just a roller coaster ever since.
We all had a big love of comic books growing up, and really Nico was our kind of homage to all those comic books, you know, brought to life, all the awesome characters, the adventures they would go on. So this is our kind of homage to all that.
I just try to think of the weirdest stuff I could think of and then just like put it in there.
From the mind of Jim into the show.
Weird and fun and also educational and just a positive influence for the next generation to grow up with.
And that's really huge. Some positive, creative things that our kids need, because let's face it, there's a lot of content out there that damaging our kids, you know, and it's good to have some good clean content. And when it comes to getting the storyline together, where do you guys get your motivation from?
Rob.
Yeah, our writer, developer, Rob Hoagie, he's been monumental in the creation.
Yeah, he comes up with scripts, and then, you know, we do drawings and stuff, and it's like, his crazy imagination, and then we get to draw it. It's really fun.
Yeah. And let's talk about the main character. Who'd like to talk about the main character?
Nico. Sure. I mean, he's basically a 10-year-old boy that is born to be a warrior, kind of the savior of the land, as you say, fighting the forces of darkness. But he comes out early. He comes out as a kid. But it's that innocence and the playfulness that really makes him stand out, you know, why he's the one that succeeds. Maybe kids can teach us more than we think, right?
Yeah, they can, because kids make us remember what it's like to be human sometimes. Absolutely. You know what I mean? When it comes to attitudes, when it comes to maybe prejudices out there,
yeah.
You have kids that can teach us a lot of lessons.
Absolutely,
out there.
Yeah.
And what's been some of the feedback of the show? Because I think it debuted on Amazon Prime, is that right?
Friday.
So have you guys gotten any feedback from it yet?
Well, we did have a pilot that scored really, really high and lots of really great feedback already. It won the Emmy in 2016, which was very rare for a pilot to win that. So it's been more than wonderful. It's the ultimate adventure show, I think, for kids.
That sounds awesome. Is there anything else about the show you would like the public to know, our parents to know about it, so we can make sure it's here for a long time? So what do we want to tell them?
It's not just for the kids. The adults will like it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a big one for us, you know. Like, we didn't want it to just be a kid's show, because adults often watching the show too. But so we made it for everyone, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I know like an adult, but like myself, I've never grown up. I still watch cartoons. So like and what do we see nowadays with the difference of cartoons or you know, content for kids about two or three decades ago to where we see it today? Well, what are some of the challenges in creating some really informative and also things that can keep the kids' attention? Because attention spans have changed over the years, especially when it comes to adults and children. So what's the challenge of keeping ones engaged?
I think one of the big things about our show is that the lessons and everything, they're kind of slipped in there with adventure, fun, different creatures, different worlds every episode. You've got to kind of sneak in that the good stuff that you want them to learn.
Without them knowing that it's sneaked in.
It's also the pacing, as you said, like, you know, the pacing of stuff has changed so much now, so we just pack this show with, like, awesome characters, monsters. Like, every episode he's fighting these different beasts with, like, 20 tentacles and eyes, and so it's kind of like the kids have so much to, you know, so much there to get their teeth stuck into.
Yeah, and he's not even fighting them, he's, like, releasing them from their cursed, you know,
darkness
that has overcome them. So
He's freeing them. This is a non-violent show too, which was important to us. You know, there's enough violence in the world without us adding to that, right?
So it's kind of like channeling the Captain EO when Michael Jackson freed the person from, remember, the old ride, Captain EO, because the beauty was in the gift, right? That's what it was, right? So let's also talk about the voice actors that you guys have chosen to play the different characters. Who'd like to go first?
Tom Kenny
is. We just have the best.
They're all. I mean, they're amazing.
We were lucky. We got some of the best talent in LA right now.
And they've totally brought a next level to the personalities of every character, like Nico and Lyra, with Tom and Kari. Did an amazing job with it.
Yeah, you have the innocence of, like, you know, the voice of Nico, who's like only a kid, with these veteran voice actors. It makes a wonderful, you know, outcome.
It's always nice to talk to creators and just ask them about their vision of bringing this to final completion. You know, think about it, folks. This started as an idea to what we see today. Also had an opportunity to talk to one of the writers, Rob Hoagie. had a chance to talk to Rob a few years back at WonderCon when it was in Los Angeles. And he was a part of the Thunderbirds production and writing staff, and had an opportunity to catch up with him and ask him about Nico and the Sword of Light.
So great to see you again.
So talk about your new project.
Well, I am doing this one here. It's called Nico and the Sword of Light. It is a fantasy adventure animated series streaming now on Amazon Prime. It follows this kid here, Nico, who's 10 years old and has been given the responsibility to save his entire world from the forces of darkness, which that's a lot of a responsibility for a little kid. But fortunately, he's got a few friends to help him along the way. And our first series follows him on this epic journey across the lands, having adventure along the way, on his way to the ultimate battle between good and evil.
And one thing I like about it, because when the pilot, I think was it last year, the pilot debuted, and one of the big, I guess, really, would impress parents, nonviolent.
Yes.
Now, why was that so important?
Well, you know, there's so much out there right now in terms of, you know, I wouldn't say to say violence, but, you know, heavy action. And while this does definitely get intense with the action, we wanted to make this in a way that actually showed sort of the silver lining of that. So in the case of Nico, when he battles a monster, he actually isn't vanquishing it forever. He's actually curing it, because in this world, a plague of darkness is spread across the land, corrupting the lands, corrupting the creatures, turning them into monsters. So one of the things Nico does is he's turning things back to normal again. So he's more of a helper than a hurter, if to put a phrase on it.
And one thing I like about it is, too, is that it really appeals to not only kids, but also adults, too.
That's true. We really wanted to make this an all-ages show. Although, you know, at the face of it, it is a kids animated series. You know, it's being made by grown-ups. And, you know, we love making this show. And so we've really instilled a lot of our own sort of passions and influences in this as well. And so, you know, our approach to storytelling is to really do something that can function on all levels, whether it's, you know, the sort of the richness of the storytelling, the sophistication of the humor, even just the plain fun of it. You know, it really is a rousing adventure.
And how is creating children content or kid content different from over 20 or 30 years ago? Because nowadays kids have a shorter attention span, even adults do too. So talk about just all what's needed to make sure that keep everyone engaged.
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I actually premiered Teen Titans, the original series, 14 years ago this week at Comic-Con, and watched a couple of the original episodes with my kids. And as amazing as that show was, it was really slow-paced compared to what we're used to now. We have to pack in a lot more story in a shorter amount of time. You know, it used to be we'd have 30 minutes to do an episode, and now we're lucky if you get 11. We're fortunate in this one, it's a full half hour. But, you know, we really do need to sort of, you know, keep the stories going. And that's just part of the fun.
So, are we starting to get the theme? Streaming is taking over. When you got Disney getting ready to do that with their content, then you know Superman is scared. So we have entered the age of video streaming. Get on board. Do it. Don't resist. In the words of the Borg Queen, resistance is futile. Isn't that right, Sean? And plus, you can stream us, too. Yes, you can. But, hey, thanks so much for being a part of this edition of the show. We hope you enjoyed all of our interviews that we had. Next week, we'll continue our theme, talking about some Comic-Con, talking about some other tech news out there that are making headlines. But remember to always connect with me, Paul, AmadeusLane.com. And thank you so much for your support. Until next time, take care of yourself, folks.